Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint, which is put on by Late Night Poets, a group on allpoetry.com. And you don't have to be a part of the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along in the chat and read the poems along with us. I am Aphasiana, and with me I have my co-host, Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hello. How are you doing?
All right. I went to the dentist today, which is not at all my favorite thing, but I did have, like, an amazing new hygienist lady, and she is just, like, my hero, because usually I just, like, absolutely hate everything, and today it was, like, pretty chill, so I don't know what was different exactly, but I feel like she's really good at, you know, not, I don't know, interfering with my tongue too much or something. I don't know. She was cool. I'm like, you're hired. Always you. I was, like, weirdly enthusiastic. Well, she's like, okay.
All right. She went home and was like, I have this really weird patient today.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I didn't throw up on you, so this is good.
always good. That's always a good dentist appointment when there's no vomit involved.
Right? How was your day?
Good. You know, tomorrow's my birthday, so I had my mom stop by. I've been having a lot of people pop in and say happy birthday and things to me, so it's been a pretty busy day. But a good day. Went out for dinner and all that.
Nice.
So,
that's good.
Yeah.
You've been working so hard. I'm glad to hear you actually have, like, a positive break.
Yeah, yesterday was my last really long day, at least for a little bit. I am, like, deep in audit season, though, so, like, I've got another audit on the 25th, and then I've got another audit in 28 days. I'm not exactly sure what date that is, but it's the follow-up audit to the other audit, and then I've got another audit that's unannounced sometime between April and June, so, yeah. Very audit-y.
Busy, busy, but... I'm glad that you're getting past the worst of the slump, I think, and I hope you have an amazing birthday tomorrow.
Yeah, worst of the slump's getting over. Still a lot more work to do, but, you know, at least a mini break.
Enjoy the rest while you can.
Yes, I will.
Pam Ray has just joined us. Hello, Pam.
Hi, Faziana. Hi, Babbler. Good to hear you both. And do my ears hear right? Do we have a birthday girl coming up?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So,
Babbler.
Oh, awesome. Happy almost birthday.
Thank you. For our East Coast listeners, it's my birthday already.
But that's true.
Oh. Yeah, good point.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, so you get to, like, double celebration. it's that, like, it's 5 o'clock somewhere kind of mentality that my dad used to always say. He probably still does.
Here's
I'm just
that.
Out there.
People who say that tend to keep saying that.
Right? our theme tonight... Well, we're having a bit of a mixed bag tonight, but my contest originally was Surface Pressure, which was based on a song that was on the movie Encanto, which is a Disney cartoon, but the song itself is really about the pressure of trying to keep up and be the strong one in the family. And the prompts were, I'm pretty sure I'm worthless if I can't be of service. Who am I if I can't carry it all? And then the lines that had to do with pressure. So it was like, pressure is a drip, 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 and it just can't stop. Pressure is a boom, 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 and it's, I can't remember the exact words for that one, but it was like, it's the emphasis of the pressure. But it's kind of like a fun, although serious song. We only got 3 entries in that contest, so I also did a pre-write contest with the theme of pressure, and that's where most of our poems are going to be. So they're not specifically inspired by that song, but they are still going to be on the general theme of being under pressure. And the song uses a volcano as a... metaphor, but we're going to see quite a mix of things tonight. And we do have a couple carryovers from the other show that I do with Dexter. So again, it's going to be a little bit of a mix, but I think it's going to be a fun mix. We're going to think of it as like a fruit salad of different flavors.
All right.
Pam, do you want us to start with yours?
Sure, you can do that. I think mine fits the topic.
Excellent. Here we go.
All right. This is, well, technically an untitled poem, and it goes like this. I did not want to inherit the penalty for crimes I did not commit. I did not want to pay taxes on flaws, not my own. Yet here I am drinking venom from a curse placed generations ago. I'm expected to be happy in a world that can't be. I'm expected to find love buried under trash piles of indifference. I wander through life like a child lost in a fog. Expectations are a ball and chain that weigh me down and break me. I am the flawed silhouette of what you think a person should be. You want me to dance, but you pull my strings until they've become frayed and brittled. Be more has become the mantra of your motivational speech. Be more friendly, be more happy, be more confident, be more positive, and love will come knocking at your door. But I don't want to mutate into a distorted reflection of you. I don't want to bask in the afterglow of faked mental orgasms. I don't want to stand on a street corner pimping myself to the type of love that wants me to be more, because I deserve the type of love that wants to hold me when I'm less. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. I really like the piece. I love some of your wordplay here. I mean, it's a very serious feeling poem. I mean, it is a serious poem, but just the idea of, you know, paying taxes on other people's flaws, you know, having to pay the price for things that other people have done, and just kind of the bitterness that builds from that, you know, especially when it's like your parents, you know, that kind of foisted them upon you and you're expected to pay the world back for stuff that you didn't do. I can definitely, you know, relate to that in many ways. But I like the way it's addressed here. I think it's done very well. And then I also love the way you talk about expectation in this piece. You know, I'm expected to be happy. You're like, I feel like there's so many expectations in modern society, like of what you're supposed to do, you know, go to school, graduate, go to college, go to work, get married, have a family. Like, they basically plot out your whole life. But especially even your emotions, both men and women, I think, have different expectations on they're supposed to handle emotionally. But, you know, women are just expected to be happy. They're expected to be smiley. They're expected to, you know, just have all this first, like, hallmarked persona. And I like how it addresses that, too, especially with the be more stanza, which I really particularly liked. You know, be more friendly, be more happy, be more confident, be more positive. It's so true. Like, it almost feels wrong or burdensome to talk about not being happy. You know, I feel like so many times a day people ask, like, how's your day? But if you were to actually tell them that you're having a shit day and really get into it, they get just kind of exasperated and want you to move on because they don't
give a shit. Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Like, you're supposed to be expected to say, like, good, and how about you? You know, and...
Yeah,
I like how it kind of addresses that, and I feel like the last stanza too is just really kind of drives it home. You know, I deserve the type of love that wants to hold me when I'm less, because that's what love really is. I mean, just as fake as pretending to be okay and pretending to be happy and positive are, so is the kind of love that only loves you when you're that. You know, it's equally phony feeling. Because that's when you need love, is when you're not more happy, more confident, more positive. I just felt like in a lot of ways this poem just says, you know, I want the world to be more real, more authentic. So I really liked it. I thought it was a great piece, and it touches on a lot of topics that I really enjoyed. So I thought it was a great write, Pam. Thanks.
Thank you.
What did you think, Stacyana?
I agree with everything that you've been saying. I liked when it talked about the intergenerational kind of trauma or guilt, where drinking venom from a curse placed generations ago. I read this book a while ago called It Didn't Start With You, and it's like about how like family trauma kind of passes its way down, and you end up having complications from from people who've had complications, and the just the way that your parents were treated is by because of the way the grandparents are treated. It's like this passed down issues, and that drinking the venom from a curse made me think about that. I think I really loved the line, buried under trash piles of indifference. And that's the thing. It's not just hate or meanness or, like, something that's particularly vicious that hurts. It's indifference. And when you're buried under all of that nothingness where there just isn't the connection or there isn't the caring, there the apathy of it all can just feel like you're drowning in it. So being expected to find love under the trash of indifference is such a strong observation, really. I loved that ending to the I deserve the type of love that wants to hold me when I'm less. And that's the thing. Love should want to help build you up, take care of you when you're down, not always expect you to be more. I mean, it's good to have someone who challenges you to be your best, but at the same time, they need to be there for you when you're not. So I think that this is a really beautifully honest piece. It's sad, and I like the part where the strings have become frayed and brittle because you've just been pulled around as a puppet. That just hurts. But it's at the same time a really beautiful piece because it exposes things and it makes you think and feel. And I just love your honest perspective, Pam.
Thank you very much.
Was there anything that you wanted to add?
Not really. I mean, I think you two pretty much nailed it. It's all about that pressure put on women to be or a certain way, and I thought Faye touched really well on the generational curse stuff and how, you know, getting into bad relationships seems to be something that goes in generations. You know, and I thought you touched really well on the be more and the expectation part of it. So, yeah, great comments to both of you. So, thank you.
Great, great call.
This is an inspiring piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom did something weird there, made a new word.
our next piece. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, I was just saying where we headed off to next.
We have one by Ravenous Pen, and it's to the line from the song, pressure like a tick, 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 till it's ready to blow. Okay, so this is St. Helen's Struggle. Molten rivers of pain worm beneath a stone straight jacket, burning pools, tears of the dragon residing within, desiring to free itself from its earthly shackles. Unruly son, ye shall obey thy father. But a brittled stallion, unbroken, always bucks. Escape the fire and brimstone, fight forever, for reaching like tendrils through every crevice, it pokes and prods till the day it longs to see. Afwoom! My mind and will not hold it still. Emotion spewing volcanic sulfuric ash, fury blind, devastating all around, past the bonds made through ages of calluses, scars from when I'd buckled before. Shall I regain composure? Shall the fires die, leaving anything behind? Eruption was my fear, but I opened the gates, and out from my mouth I burned my world again. End poem.
Great read, Faisy, on that. I really love the passion in this piece. You know, the words that were chosen really kind of reinforce that kind of burbling anger and rage. You know, comparing that struggle to, you know, a volcano, Mount St. Helens. You know, pain being molten rivers and tears being burning pools, and just trying to fit the mold when it's just not possible. You know, trying to obey their father, trying to meet the expectations of society, but just everything in you, like, burning to burst out and just be yourself and do what you want to do until you explode, which is very well expressed, I think, in the middle of this piece in the Aspanopia, like the Aspa woo, like just watching the volcano burst, you know, and to just spew all of that retained emotion that was in, you know, and then when I get to that last stanza, you know, shall I regain composure? Shall the fires die, leaving anything behind? Eruption was my fear, but I opened the gates, and out from my mouth I burned my world again. Meaning this is cyclical. You know, it's happened before. Like the rage has burned, you know, come out and you've disobeyed, or you've started an argument, or you've gotten into a fight, or, you know, you've just done something defiant, and everything's just going to have to rebuild, but then the cycle is just going to repeat. Which, you know, I'm sure many an angry teen can relate to, but it doesn't have to be a teenager. I think in here it really kind of feels like it, just because it's unruly son, ye shall obey thy father. But, I mean, it could be any book, anything. I mean, because that could even just be biblical. You know, even me some days, you know, I work and work and work, and I try to do everything at work that I'm supposed to do. Some days it's just too much. You know, I either need a mental health day or, you know, I just kind of implode a bit. But it's the same thing. You know, just the occasional burnout and rage. You need a break. I'm going to do it all again because that's how I operate, healthy or not. So I really liked this piece. I thought it expressed that rage and that buildup very well. So, wonderful write from Ravenous Pen. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really liked this. I thought Beneath a Stone Straitjacket was a really great use of the phrase. And I liked how he describes the pressure, the buildup of pressure as a volcano, but describes the metaphorical volcano as a dragon residing within earthly shackles. You know, I did have to agree with you. I did kind of have that impression of a teenager, but yet at the same time, there are those families where adult pressure or pressure is put on adult sons, say, to, like, carry on the family business, carry on family expectations. And I really liked how they created the sound of the volcano, like, right after the first two stanzas. I thought that was really cool and added to the intensity of the rite. And I found it really interesting and really fascinating that the end stanza where there's the starts with a couple of questions, which I thought was really cool. Shall the fires die, leaving anything behind? And then ends with one word, or, you know, ends with, and out from my mouth I burned my world again. So what tells me is this, that this person has lost their temper more than once, but destroyed things around them, possibly relationships, you know, maybe opportunities, and what yet was able to rebuild things. At least that's the impression I get from it. And I think ending on the again, dot, 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 with it, like the kind of lingering off like that, is the whole idea to me of are they going to be able to keep rebuilding their world? You know, is this a situation that has to be handled because eventually the explosion is the world, the opportunities, the relationships aren't going to keep coming back. So just a really strong write and very well done.
No, I agree. I like that comment. Yeah, it does feel like a very cyclical rebuild. Excellent comment, Pam. Oh, what did you think of Asiana?
I completely agree with what Pam was saying there about it being a cyclical thing, and it seems like it's happened before and will probably happen again. That was my favorite line. And out from my mouth, I burned my world. Because sometimes you say things that you can't take back. You can burn bridges just by saying something. So the I burned my world shows, I mean, probably a relationship could also be a career. Just by saying the wrong thing in anger, you can destroy things. And letting all of that boil under the surface for so long and then erupting seems like it's something that happens a lot in this case. So I liked the way that that was handled. I liked when it said, reaching like tendrils through every crevice, because the anger kind of finds its way out. Even when you try to repress it, it seeps out into what you're doing and saying. And the stallion's always going to buck. You know that it's eventually going to happen. And trying to repress that just leads to an even bigger buck. I liked when it says, scars from where and when I'd buckled before. And the buckled goes well with the buck. It sounds similar, but it fits in there where the bucking and you're kicking, or the buckled and you're falling under the weight, those two are connected, even though they're in some ways opposites. And I think that using them both worked really well for this poem.
Great comment, Ephesiana. No, I think so too. I think the opposites, but tying them back together, I think was very effective. So excellent, right? What do we have up next?
We have one by Daniel Deschino. Can you read that one, Babbler?
Absolutely. This is Vows by Daniel Deschino. Who am I if I can't comply with perfection of judgment? A glimmer in every eye, I feel the pressure grow in every line on my face. I think it will until I die. But wait a minute. Just hold on a second here. Is that me? I only have wanted the truth, and I owe it to those hydraulic hammers I call other humans, so I give them me or nothing at all. A priest who ponders of once thrown away passage, scientist whose fumble creates a spark of mind, or a poet who rediscovers the animal-human connection. Discovery is a journey, not a quick, stagnant vision, and those who do not walk do not move, but the pressure. So where is the release valve for this pressurized life? I don't know. But for me, I babble in words, in hopes other babblers will find a smile or a memory. And I phase in and out from thought to harsh reality, from fantasy to the cruel, tormenting senses, and marvel at other phasing brethren as thoughts harmonize on the airways of contemplation. But alas, I still feel an infant among the traveling wordsmiths as I stand in the valleys and marvel at the mountaintop. And discovery fills my eyes with passionate days, inspiring rays, poetic artistry, and welcoming eyes blind to the colorization of conformity. I write to discover, to grow, to release the pressure built up within and remember the youthful days of delight. So please forgive my childlike mind. We are all children, always. End poem. I really enjoyed this piece. You know, just the idea of trying to be perfect and trying to be better and just like that self analysis and weight that you can even put on yourself and feel from other people whether they mean it or not. I really liked the line, I've only wanted the truth and I owe it to those hydraulic hammers I call other humans. You know, thinking of other people not so much as people but as hammers, like pounding at you, like mechanically, you know, and still just wanting to give them everything that you can give them. And I like the idea that, you know, it's a slow process. It's not easy to just improve and become better at things. So I really enjoyed that about this piece, you know, just the working through things. You know, I babble in words and hope other babblers will find a smile or a memory, and I phase in and out from thought to harsh reality. You know, just going through all of your memories and words and writing them down, even if they aren't exactly what you want, because that's how you're going to improve. You know, I really enjoyed that, just not understanding how to release the pressure, not understanding how to decompress, but still doing your best to release it by expressing yourself through poetry or whatever outlet. So I really liked this. You know, it felt almost like an off-gassing in a way. I thought it was well written. I also like the line he put in here too about, or a poet who rediscovers the animal-human connection, especially because I feel like a lot of Daniel's work lately has really been exploring that particular connection. So I've enjoyed a lot of his recent pieces kind of on that exact topic. I want to read his AN here because he put some notes in here that are kind of a nod to us, which I thought was nice. It says, for part sinner, part saint on surface pressure. Point to note, I find the community here on all poetry to be some of the most welcoming, positive, and accepting I have seen. It's a pleasure to be a part of a community that inspires so much freedom of expression. As a rambling, simple-minded amateur poet at best, it is what I need to learn and grow. This poem is dedicated to the inspirational kindness that is all poets' community, where I find there is no pressure. Peace and happiness. So I just thought that was a really sweet nod to the community. And I agree. I think we have a wonderful community here that is very embracing of everyone. And Daniel, give yourself a little bit more credit. You're a pretty good poet. So I enjoyed the piece. Ephesiana, what did you think?
I'm so glad you pointed out the author's note. I hadn't read that part yet, and I think that's a very sweet thing. And you're right, he does not give himself enough credit because I think he's an amazing poet. But he is right that there's an amazing community here that we're lucky to be a part of. So thank you, Daniel, for being a part of that community. And I do find that late night poets and all poetry have been, you know, really inspiring for a lot of people, and having that positive influence on your poetry, just having someone who's willing to listen and read it and think about it can be a really great thing for relieving that pressure. Even though contests can be intimidating and feel like pressure sometimes, I like to think that we are not putting too much pressure on. I love that line that you pointed out, Babbler, about the hydraulic hammers. To those hydraulic hammers, I call other humans. That is such an amazing part of this poem. It's just so strong to refer to other people as hydraulic hammers, that pressure that they are putting on. Where is it? And I like that you pointed out the part about the animal-human connection, because it's true. The last few weeks, the poems by him have had that connection. There was the one with the polar bear and the seal. He's definitely been delving into that. Now, maybe this is weirdly conceited of me, but there was the one stanza where I really thought he was talking about us. When he is talking about Babel and other babblers, I think he was referencing you. And then people sometimes call me Faze, and it says, and I phase out right after it talks about babbler. So I think even though he's using those words in their real context and it makes sense using them as the actual words, I think he purposely chose words to reference us.
I agree. I think so, too.
As I was reading, I'm like, hey, that's us. When I'm like, wait, it's one of those, like, you probably think this song is about you. You're so vain. Yeah, but no, I think it was a nod, especially after reading the AN. And thank you, Daniel. I think that's really cool. The subtle way that it was put in there, where it made perfect sense in terms of the words. The stanza that says, I still feel an infant among the traveling wordsmiths. Me too. And I think that he describes imposter syndrome really well in that stanza. And the childlike mind thing at the end, I mean, children have the best minds. They're so open-minded and curious, and I don't think anyone should ever apologize for having a childlike mind.
No, I think it's a good thing to be that open-minded and exploratory. I agree with that. Pam, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed and appreciated this. Well, first of all, I have to agree that I think that one stanza is a nod towards both of you. So very cool there. I did really like his AN. And I like how he talks about the buildup of pressure and the pressure put on you by other people. And where he mentions, you know, not really knowing about how to relax, how to, you know. And I think in this society, honestly, there's even a pressure to relax in that perfect way, like feeling like, you know, you have to fit it in. And you not only have to fit it in, but you have to do it in a way that shows how really cool you actually are. You know, and I like the part about that having a childlike mind, and I think that's so important for any creative person, because children think so much out of the box, and you know, I like how he just, but alas, I still feel an infant among the traveling wordsmiths as I stand in the alleys and marvel at the mountaintops. I think so many of us have been at that point where we feel that way. You know, but what's important is taking the journey, and I have to agree that Daniel definitely undercredits himself. But what I really like that this, to me, focuses on multiple types of pressure, the pressure we get from society and the pressure that we get from ourselves, which can be just as difficult to deal with. So excellent write and very well done.
Great commentary, Pam. I heartily agree with all of your points. Thank you. What do we have up next, Ephesiana? You there?
I'm sorry, I was muted. Pam, would you please read the one by Jared A. Harris?
I would be happy to. All right, this is Pressure Won't Break. Pressure Won't Break Me by Jared A. Harris. And it goes like this. Trifled by society's foreshadowing eye left to burn under mass scrutiny. Bible verse privately caroling. Why accept who learns numbers of past mutiny? Community of seldom change while the spill of bad luck often hangs. Unity was felon's deranged smile, heal blood and add buck. Costing strange. The child in yesterday's mirror said many things about growth. Denial been severed away. Consider bread as plenty to cling, as mouth boast. Grab my jacket and head out to find resolve for kids in wishful thinking. Have I panicked then, hand red? Doubts you sometime revolve and mature as big when fistful of sinking appear. Dear Mama Honor fled with weary peers, speaking as if known better. Clear of commas, ponder bled his teary fears, weakling has missed home forever. End poem.
excellent read, Pam. I found this one really fascinating, just the stylized sentence structure and word form. It feels really heavy, and I think it gets at the pressure in that way, just because there's so many concepts and words just kind of tripping over each other as you read this. I mean, even as you just jump in, it's just trifled by society's foreshadowing eye left to burn under mass scrutiny. Just being torn apart by people watching you and judging every single thing that you do, from the Bible to the community to, prison sentences to just all kinds of things, and just trying to find your way through life while constantly being judged. And even you feeling like the judgment of your own childhood, that line, "The child in yesterday's mirror said many things about growth." I think that's my favorite line from this piece, the idea that who you were as a kid, you had many ideas of what you could have, would have, should have grown up to be. And now here you are looking back in the mirror and feeling pressured by your own expectations of yourself. And just even the weight of that, like you're not even free from your own judgment. So I really enjoyed that part of the piece. And also, just grab my jacket to head out to find resolve for kids and wishful thinking, trying to go get to work to get back at it to meet, all of these expectations, but still just kind of sinking and feeling tired, just kind of pressed down by trying to be an adult in a world that's just full of expectations and judgment from every possible angle, and just the exhaustion that I feel from this piece by the end, where the language just kind of gets more to that tired, exhausted feeling, when fists full of sinking appear and honor fled with weary peers, bled his teary fears, weakling has missed home forever, the exhaustion and the burnout of trying to be better and trying to meet expectations and constantly feeling like you're failing, but not giving up. Even the title is "Pressure Won't Break Me," tired but not broken. So I thought this piece was really interesting, and I thought the choice of language and structure was also very fascinating and different from a lot of the things that I've read. So I thought this was a great write. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a great write with some wonderful end and inner rhyme. I really like the confidence within the title with "Pressure Won't Break Me." I also found "clear of commas" near the end a fascinating line because of the fact that it to me touches on the pressure put on poets oftentimes. To write poems in such a way that, because people are picky about, there are people who nitpick at every little thing, including if you put too many commas in, if you put too little commas in, and it all depends on people's personal taste. But too oftentimes, there's that idea of, in order to be a good poet, this is how you should punctuate or this is how you shouldn't punctuate. I also felt like the comma itself represented the idea of like the clear of commas represent the idea of someone who doesn't pause necessarily to take that deep breath. I really liked "Bible wise privately caroling while except to learn numbers of past mutiny." And with, numbers being a book in the Bible and personally, in my opinion, probably one of the more boring books, to me, there's like this kind of pressure of growing up. To me, in these lines, growing up in a religious family where you're expected to memorize every little tidbit, and where he says, "grab my jacket and head out to find resolve for kids and wishful thinking," I feel like that too is a very confident line. That too is saying, you know what, I'm not going to be, and I could be wrong, but I get the idea, it's like, I'm not going to be my family's idea of what religion or spirituality is going to be. I'm going to take what I've learned through my life, and I'm going to pass that on to kids in need. And by doing that, I've found my own sense of purpose, and I don't have to be, you know, chained down to other people's senses of purpose for me. So really just a really thoughtful write with the hard-hitting lines and very well done.
I really like that interpretation, Pam. I think you did pick up on some things that maybe I missed on my first read-through. I like the idea of breaking free and giving back. Excellent observation. Athesiana, what did you think?
Well, I love what both of you have said. I think you pointed out some things that I saw and also some things that I had missed. So I'm glad I got to comment after you and just think about what you said. I really liked society's foreshadowing eye, that idea of the expectations, where they're hinting at where you should be going, and you feel like you have to follow those foreshadowing clues, and you know that you're under mass scrutiny of if you are going to follow that plan the way that the plot seems like it's supposed to go. Where is it now? Deranged smile, heal blood in ad buck costing strange. Something about that it's healing in the derangedness of the smile just makes me feel like it's that fake smile where you're kind of forced to seem like you're healing, but you're still bloodied. You're still in pain, but have that smile painted on. I loved the line that was already pointed out. The child in yesterday's mirror said many things about growth. The child in yesterday's mirror, I feel like that could be a title too. That is such a powerful line. I really enjoyed the internal rhyme all throughout this. It's subtle because it's not all end rhymes, but it helps create a rhythm, and it feels like this is just meant to be read out loud. If you've never heard Jared do spoken word, he's really good at it, and he has such a wonderful reading voice. I wish he'd do more SoundClouds. This is a strong piece, and I'm not going to just repeat what you guys said, but you both made some wonderful comments.
Great observations. No, I feel you. Like I just really do like that line. I think that line in the middle could even be just its own, I don't know, kind of spurs me on some thinking myself, which I love lines like that. So, excellent observation. What do we have up next?
We have one by Scraps and Scribbles, so I'm going to read that. And thank you, Pam, for noticing that Babbler dropped and getting her back in, because I missed that while I was commenting. This is called Trash by Scraps and Scribbles. I love it when I float and rise above the bullshit, bitchin' strained hypocrisy, escaped from empty talk and sucking blood, feel wild and free, just high on being me. That rarest moment, just a little while, when I am just enough, my own best friend, to flip off judge and jury, skip my trial, and make them run to catch me till the end. I watch with wild, emancipating stars. We share a knowing nod, two gutter snipes. I feel as though I cannot run too far to leave the noise behind me with its hype. I ain't no saint. I'm just some stellar ash, an educated upstart, scrap white trash. End poll.
Great read. I really enjoyed this piece. It's fun. It has a great attitude to it. It's very funky and punchy, you know. Just even that opening. I love it when I float and rise above the bullshit, bitchin', strained hypocrisy. It's got real rhythm to it, which I enjoyed. I also just love the bit of vernacular there, like the lopping off the G's and just exploring, you know, freedom. But I love how there's still an acknowledgement of the cost of this, you know. The flipping off a judge and jury, skipping your trial, and making them run to catch you. You know, it's a bit of a wild hair and a romp, but there's payout for that. You know, there's comeuppance. So I like that. You know, I cannot run too far to leave the noise behind me with the type. You know, it's not really escaped. It's a momentary escape, but there's still consequences. You know, and there's some nods in here, you know, to Oscar Wilde with the way they spelled Wilde and capitalized it as being, you know, just a relation to his own wild, upstarty background. And then, of course, that the last line, you know, I ain't no saint, I'm just some stellar ash, an educated upstart, scrap white trash. You know, just embracing that part of yourself, the scrappy bit. So I really liked it. I didn't do the line count, but my eyes are telling me that it's in a sonnet form. So I don't know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun and punchy and very lively bit of just embracing the more rapscallion side of personality. So I thought it was a fun write. Athesiana, what did you think?
I love that people are doing sonnets that aren't necessarily, like, old-fashioned. I mean, I like old-fashioned poetry, too. But this is, like, a gritty urban sonnet of contemporary times. And there's just something about that, like, tickles my fancy. It's just, like, the idea of it being relevant and, I mean, not to say other poetry isn't relevant, but there is this idea that, you know, there's poetries for, say, just like the university type, which, I mean, I am, so I'm not trashing them at all. But there's something to be said about, like, street poets, and I feel like this is a melding of the two, and I love that bridge between worlds. I did not know the word gutter snipes, and I looked it up, and I love it. Why have I not used this word? Gutter snipe, a scruffy and badly behaved child who spends most of their time on the street. But just the word gutter snipe is just, I don't know. It's just fun the way that it's worded. The vocabulary in this is interesting. It has an attitude that is fun, and yet it has a serious tone at the same time. I'm just stellar ash. I really like that. You know, if we say stardust, to refer to ourselves as stardust happens quite a bit in poetry, but to say it as stellar ash just adds this grittiness to it. I really like this take on it.
I also really liked the stellar ash, you know, a new spin on an old idea, which I think is kind of what you're getting at, too, with the new sonnet, you know, the modernized sonnet, which I agree adds a lot of fun. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really also liked what Faisy had to say about the modern sonnet and how it's really cool to see people writing in a style that's, centuries old, but adding imagery and language to it that is more accessible and relatable for modern man. I thought this had wonderful, hard-hitting and edgy lines, you know. It almost had, like, within that second line, the bullshit, bitch, and stained hypocrisy, escape from empty talk and sucking blood. It almost like had a rap battle type feel to it that I really enjoyed and appreciated. And what I really like about this is the overall tone of it, the attitude in it, has a really bold sense of confidence in oneself and an ability to rise above. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I do like that there is that kind of theme of overcoming and escaping. I think it was there is something very uplifting feeling about it. So, I agree. Wonderful comment, Pam. So what do we have up next?
We have one by Diane D. Would you read that for us, Bebler?
Absolutely. This is Coyote Howls and Eagle Soars by Diane D. I was trapped within the vacuum, in the hell that was my home, marred and tortured by the memories and prepared to walk alone. With every breath of courage, I tried to face another day, but I would lie within the acid if I could have my way. I was searching for a purpose, for a pathway to my soul. Bitter scars and years of hatred combined to make me whole. Moonless shadows all around me as I climbed that mountain trail. I might perish in the anguish, but in this quest I could not fail. Tender winds and lights of healing waiting there within the tree. Coyote howls and eagle soars, they were sent to set me free. Words of hope and gifts of comfort were mine to understand. I drank in every ounce of knowledge that I found within this land. As I head back to my future, I leave behind me years of pain. There's a new life in the making from the wisdom I have gained. End poem. I enjoyed this piece. It felt like a nod to Native American folklore and the use of the coyote howls and the eagle soars. And just kind of like that spiritual exploration that you see in a lot of Native American culture, you know, and just the devastation and like the poor mindset of the before, you know, the slogging through every day. I found the line, "But I would lie within the acid if I could have my way," is particularly devastating, you know, because feeling trapped is one thing and feeling tortured is one thing, but and you read those lines a lot, so I think they lose a little bit of their punch. Not these exact lines, obviously, but just the concept of being trapped and tortured. But to read that they would rather just give up and lie in the acid, it's just there's something very visceral about that. It seems very specific. And, you know, you can just see, like, at least I can see just, like, acid, like, burning them away. You know, just living life without a purpose. And then to just have this kind of spiritual awakening and epiphany that's just revitalizing their entire life and just finding a better understanding in the landscape and then with nature. So I really enjoyed the piece. I thought it was very well written, and I liked that it had kind of a narrative, like it had a progress to it. So I thought it was a wonderful write from Diane. Tiziana, what did you think?
I really loved the way it flowed. Like it felt like she had such care in her meter when she was putting this together. It had a rhythm to it. I really liked what you said as well about the part with the acid. That took me by surprise as well, the way that it was worded. I drank in every ounce of knowledge that I found within this land. I really love that. I respect that idea of trying to know all that you can, that lifelong learning, learning in every way that you can. And I do like kind of indigenous nature of this learning, where it seems like learning from the animals, from the earth, from the kind of like old ways of the before modern learning. Not that I'm against modern learning, because I, you know, I'm also really into education, but I love that kind of respect for the land that I see here and that connection with learning from nature.
Yeah, it was very naturalistic. I do agree. It feels very rhythmic. There's, I think, a lot of attention given to the cadence here. Excellent observation. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really liked this. That wonderful rhythm, as you guys say, the cadence was beautiful. I like that it did touch on the idea of learning and finding knowledge within, you know, the connection between man and nature, and that there's this wonderful sense of healing, of going from a life where, you know, it just, things were horrible, to finding yourself, finding your sense of peace, and finding that wisdom gained, just a really wonderful rite and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. Just that mental growth and wisdom, I think, is a good takeaway. So excellent comment, Pam. Where are we headed off to now?
Now we have one by Hosk. And I'm just trying to think whose turn it is to read. Is it Pam's? I think so. Pam, would you read this?
Absolutely. The Tragedy That I Am by Hosk. And it goes like this. I shouldn't be allowed to have friends. No matter what I do, it always ends. In one way or another, no one will ever stay forever. Overwhelming sensations of loneliness, gritted teeth barely holds my openness. It all becomes an honest lie. For this transgression, I'd like to die. And unlike Midas's dirty trick, the lives I touch turn to shit. You'll tell me that you know better. You'll say none of that's true. I'll eventually believe you, but that'll be a lie too. I shouldn't have been born. I wander with black fleece unshorn, quartered by my mind equine, thoughts and feelings whirling on a dime, twisting, turning, no more direction, detrimental since my conception. And as I bleed and beg for help, I can't ask for more. I'll put myself up on your shelf and down beneath the floor, then cry so loud and unto myself. Even as I pen this piece, an acid burns inside my guts, a cocktail of shame and blame that I can hardly contain, all because I cannot abstain from complaining of this rain that deluges my heart through flood-stained features. I'll thank you for the pain. I'll need it for my art. End poem.
Great read, Pam. This is a, I don't know, it's almost hard to read kind of piece. You know, as someone who has struggled with mental health, this reminds me a lot of the self-talk cycles that I would get into where I'd just be really down on myself. Now, most of the time I didn't express this to other people, you know, but I've certainly been around other people who do. It's just kind of a hard thing to reconcile, you know. When you're depressed and not feeling good about yourself and you have really low self-esteem, it doesn't really matter how many times people tell you that what you're saying isn't true, because it feels like it's true to you. And so it feels like what they're saying is BS, or they don't really understand. And so it just kind of gets thrown off, you know. It's done with a wonderful rhyme scheme in this piece that kind of gives it a bit of a flair, I think, and softens the blow in some ways. But, you know, just the idea that, you know, unlike Midas's dirty trick, the lives I touch turn to shit. You know, they feel like they're damaging everyone around them. And then that next stanza, you'll tell me that you know better. You'll say that none of that's true. Eventually, I'll eventually believe you, but that'll be a lie too. You know, just other people can't talk you out of this horrible, negative, repetitive internal talk. You know, and it's just, it's hard to read, but it's good to read, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think any feelings or expressions or mind states should really be taboo or off limits in poetry. You know, I think it's important to write these things out, and I think it's important to read these kind of things so that you have better understanding of other people's mindsets. I think it goes a long way in helping people to be empathetic because, you know, you see more facets of people's experiences, you know, and just watch the narrator here go through this twisting, turning kind of self-depreciation. And then, of course, you get to that last stanza where it really even tightens on that rhyme scheme and gets almost rapish in it, you know, a cocktail of shame and blame that I can hardly contain because I cannot abstain from the complaining of this rain. Like, just, it's very rhythmic, you know, that long ain is on the same beat as you read it, you know, and then at the end to be thankful even for the pain because you need it for your art. You know, art is so much more well expressed when there's authentic motion behind it, be it positive or negative. But find that still relatable, you know. It's easiest and I think most effective when you can write from a place that you've really been, because other people who've been there can feel that, even if they've been there only adjacently. You know, I feel like I can read when people have experienced real pain, and used it to create poetry or paintings, other forms of art. So, you know, just while it's kind of a difficult thing to read, this person just be really down on themselves. And when I say this person, I mean the narrator. You know, I understand that there can be a separation between what's written and how a person feels. but to read this, you know, just this pounding downwardness on themselves that I think is really kind of backed up to by that rhyme scheme. And then funnel it into it, that last bit of gratitude, I think is really interesting. So I enjoyed the piece. I thought it was a really good write, and a write on a topic and a mindset that I think some people avoid. Because especially when, at least I'm in this mindset, I feel like expressing it is burdensome to other people, almost like it's not worth expressing my actual feelings because no one should give a shit because even I don't give a shit, if that makes sense. So I thought this was a great write. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. This is definitely a great write. It has a wonderful rhyme and flow. I like how she didn't stick, or they didn't stick to a consistent amount of lines in a stanza. It kind of was, you know, cool to see things switched up. This is extremely relatable to anybody who has done that, as you mentioned, Babla, that self-talk, you know, and having the hardest. And when you see something as the truth, you know, you can't believe what people say, you know. And so many times when you've been dealt the hand where you, over and over again, people have lied to you, have proved themselves to not be trustworthy, it's really hard to have faith in what they say. What people say. I really like that end stanza with a cocktail of shame and blame that I can hardly contain, all because I cannot abstain from complaining of this rain. And I really liked how that end stanza talks about how we take our pain that we go through and we turn it into art. I also really like the line, overwhelming sensation of loneliness, gritted teeth barely holds my openness. Like that whole idea of everything that you want to just pour out into people's faces, you know, and tell them, you know, you have to like bite your tongue, bite your lip, and just hold everything back. So really excellent and emotive and strong lines and very well done.
Yeah, I also really liked that line about the teeth holding them together. Like, it just, I don't know, there was something very visual and implicating in that line. I thought it was a great one as well. Excellent observation. Daisiana, your thoughts?
I was drawn to that line as well. Gritted teeth barely holds my openness. And the idea of, you know, holding your openness to your, where you have to control how open you want to be because the bad things have happened, and gritting your teeth to stop it. I don't think that line is so powerful. And the Midas part was my favorite. The idea that, you know, Midas turns everything he touches to gold. So to feel like you're the opposite of that, turning everything to shit. I think that was a thing, the Sidem touch. There was a thing that was like that. It was like everything you touch dies. And this isn't quite to the extreme of everything dies, but everything seems to fall apart. And I've definitely felt that at times in my life where it's like I'm just bad for everything. And this does have that kind of self-talk spiraling out kind of feeling of when you're in a really bad place. It definitely is captured in a way that makes me think that the poet actually has had that kind of experience where you're spiraling out. I wander with black fleece unshorn, the idea of being the black sheep, but also being unshorn, like nobody's taking care of that black sheep, and it's gotten out of control. I think that works really well on a metaphorical level, but also sometimes when you're really depressed, it's hard to take care of yourself. I know I've had some pretty crazy hair going on at times where I just can't bring myself to deal with it. And something about that unshorn, I feel like could work on multiple levels. Where's the other part there? An acid burns inside my guts, a cocktail of shame and blame. It's funny how that actually is a physical thing. Like, I know it also works on a metaphorical level of, you know, you're being burned by your shame and blame, but I physically feel sick when I have this emotional feeling. Like, you actually feel the acid eat away at your stomach. I think that's a real thing. Maybe I just have, ulcers or something. But I think it really does get you when you're in that emotional spiral. And I think that this poet brings that to life. It brings in the physical aspects of the emotional tally, because depression and anxiety have physical symptoms. Like, it really hits you. It's not just in your head, in terms of literally as well. Like, you experience it all throughout your body. And I think that this shows this in a way that someone who has experienced it will relate to very deeply. And then if you haven't, it might help create empathy.
I agree that it's a really physical feeling. You know, before I have a panic attack, or even sometimes during my panic attack, that's how I feel. I feel sick to my stomach. And all I can think about is not vomiting. Like, I've never vomited, but the anxiety and the guilt and the pressure and just all of the things that I have going on emotionally, like, literally make me feel sick. I overwhelmingly feel like I'm going to throw up. But I never throw up. So I know exactly what you're talking about, that acidic stomach feeling of just extreme nausea. It's terrible. But, yeah, I do think it is a real physiological thing. So great comment, Emmett. Great comments all around. And what did you think, Pam?
I thought I already commented on this one.
Yeah, she did.
I think you did. I think you did, and I just forgot for a second. After we said that, I'm like, and Pam went first. Anyway, so where are we off to next?
Now we have one by In Chains called The Return of Ghost. And this is a carryover as well from the Double Helix show, where it was just share something deep about yourself was the theme. The Return of Ghost. I remember the sun with dirty wings of a dove in incarcerated acid, fog scarring the lining of oak between nightmarish yards, twisted fingers, pulse kisses, shattered symmetrical shivers, echelon of stone, stepping shadows, bleeding bone dry blues. Wind stoked, stained ashy, rainbows set back in the tongue and groove of maple's pink fondue breeze across threaded pieces of waking, night dripping onto the palm of the blind upon a paddle boat overlooking quay capsized. Ashes in the water, and then again upon vertical blood, twigs, as I sung my mourner's song from a fucking torn braille script, turning to grit beneath nail-clustered fingertips, beautiful meadow on the other side of a limbo, limbo, a reserve for bones stripped down to guttered morsels, slick, where this mannequin's vague existence barely thrives, yet breathes within upon a rotted apple orchard mountain, cold. End poem.
Excellent read, Faziana. I really enjoyed the imagery in this piece. I think it tells you a story that's emotional through just one image to the next. You know, I remember the sun with the dirty wings of a dove in incarcerated acid fog. And it just continues the thought and kind of pulls you along this narrative of something bright and sunny that's being destroyed in like this terrible place and just things falling apart. And some of these word pairings are really beautiful. You know, I really liked bleeding bone dry blues. I feel like that just gets that emotively, like crying yourself so there's nothing left. Like it's just empty, dry sobbing, or not even sobbing anymore, to the point where there's not even the energy of that. I just feel like it's really emotive in that way, you know. And then in the next stanza, when I read stained ashy rainbows set back in the tongue and groove of maple's pink fondue breeze, I picture, you know, like this reservation of hope, like this tucked away reservoir of still like a colorful hopefulness to it, which I thought was really beautiful and just kind of spilling out, you know, a night dripping onto the palm of the blind upon a paddle boat overlooking quay capsized. Just the overlooking quay capsized, just the fall, just the spilling, like there's double spilling, like the darkness of night, you know, into the hand of someone who can't even see it, and then that pours over as well, and you can feel it. I just thought this was really stunning, this kind of exploration of emotion in, like, loosely affiliated imagery that just kind of paints its own narrative. The more I get to the end, you know, mannequin's vague existence barely thrives, yet breathes within upon a rotted apple orchard, mountain cold. You know, just this the shell kind of feeling, the shell, but there's still something inside, you know, like a heartbeat barely beating. I just thought it was really beautiful and interestingly emotive. So I thought it was a great write. It was wonderfully done. What did you think of Aziana?
I really enjoyed it. It does have beautiful imagery. I find it interesting that the last three poems have all used acid in their descriptions, even though they weren't written to the same prompt. But I like that she does it as incarcerated acid. Incarcerated is such a cool word choice right there. That acid is trapped within there. The descriptions are just amazing. It works really well for her having just one word lines. It doesn't always work out for people, but I feel like it did here. It made you pause and think about each word. The maple's pink fondue breeze was also one that caught me. I'm glad that you mentioned that one. And the ashes in water was a striking image to me. I could just picture the ashes floating in the water. And then it goes upon vertical blood. Now that's like, you'd never think of blood being vertical. So it's like the splatter effect happened in my mind. A song from a fucking torn braille script. I think the swearing in that line was strategic and really well done, because it really hits you. It's like, are you paying attention? It's not just, you know, a torn script. It is a fucking torn braille script. That really, like, snaps your attention. And I think that the fact that it's braille is important there. It's trying to get the blind to understand. People who are, I think, metaphorically blind to the situation, probably. And it also, it has that tactile experience of reading Braille, which adds to a different kind of imagery. And then to talk right away about grit beneath the nails, the Braille bumps can be the grit. But the idea of the nail clustered fingertips. Clustered is an interesting choice right there. Bone stripped down to guttered morsels. That is such an intense image. Really powerful, dark imagery here. Reminds me a little bit of something by Neutron Bomb, who's really good at the gritty, dark imagery. I was impressed with this piece.
Yeah, I love the dark grittiness of this. There's just a real beauty to the wild imagery choice. And I had noted, too, mentally the acid theme that's kind of happening in the subtext. and I thought that was kind of interesting, too, especially since this one's a carryover from a different context. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is just, it's beautiful. The imagery is dark, haunting, and emotive. I too like that torn braille script line. I also liked bones stripped down to guttered morsels, slick where this mannequin's vague existence barely thrives yet breathes within a pond, a rotted apple orchid. There's just really such a sense of feeling like your emotions are numb, are dead. I also really like the wind-stoked, stained, ashy rainbows set back in the tongue and groove of maple pink fondue breeze. She just has this way with putting imagery that you wouldn't think to put together, like a fondue breeze. You just feel like within that moment there's that idea of every bit of happiness in life kind of being covered with ash and just flailing blindly through life. So really just a strong write all the way through, wonderful imagery and very well done.
Yeah, the imagery in this is great. And yeah, there are a few points. I like your takeaway, just the stumbling blindly through life, because there are so many nods to different kinds of blindness in this. I think that was a great observation. So excellent write. Where are we off to now?
We have one by R. Emmett. Will you read that, please, Babler?
Absolutely. This is The Solemnity of Mary by R. Emmett. Home now, soft as the day is long, and my temper's reached the pitch for the holy morning's business. I'm still in a tie. It's in a fine knot, and so am I. But the clasp is gone, so are you, and I'm not sure if I left either in St. Mary's or on a barroom floor. End poem. I really like this piece. It's a short piece, but it says so much indirectly, just, you know, getting home, still drunk and angry, still dressed in a suit and tie from the day before, and just, but the tie-ins here, you know, it's in a fine knot, and so am I. Just the comparing yourself to the tie that's left over from yesterday, as like where you are emotionally and how you're feeling, you know, and the clasp is gone, and so are you. So like, this other person being the thing that held it all together, and yet not knowing, you know, if both the clasp or this other person was left behind either somewhere in a church or on the barroom floor from the night before, you know, just completely having lost track of the things that hold them together, like that make life complete. I really love it. I think it's so well done. It's a short piece, and it feels like gritty and emotional, and I feel like I can just see this hungover, hot mess that's on some level aware of loss, but not even really coming to terms with it quite yet because they're still just drunk and angry. I think this is such a nice flash imagery of a state of mind. I just really liked it. I thought it was very well done. Tam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is definitely a strong brevity. And I like how it really reflects the idea of someone who feels disappointed in themselves, feels like they've disappointed other people, and there's that real sense of loneliness. And I like the wordplay in the second stanza where he says, I'm still in a tie, it's in a fine knot, and so am I, with the idea that the tie is supposed to be in the knot, but he isn't, you know. And I feel like, you know, it's that idea of somebody who turns to alcohol to, you know, numb the pain of the loss. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. I also really liked that metaphor. I thought it was well executed. Excellent comment. Feziana, what did you think?
I agree with you both. You called out that metaphor just perfectly of the tie in the fine knot, and so am I, and the idea of the clasp being the person that was holding everything together, and when they left, he was just left as fallen apart as the knot is the next day. It's still tight and almost like it's supposed to be, but it's wrong. It's in that next day messed up, maybe too tight, but not shaped as it should be, kind of mess the next day. And that idea that he's changed because he's not even sure where he lost the person in St. Mary's or on a barroom floor. I like the contrast between the St. Mary's and I keep saying ballroom, barroom, because it's it's so different, and that feeling of losing the clasp that was holding you together. Yeah, this is a brief piece, but it does say quite a bit.
Yeah, and like the messy, yeah, I think that not metaphor was just very well done in this piece. Excellent comments, Viviana, and wonderful write from our Emmett. So what do we have up now?
Pam, if you're able to read Blue Write 76, that's the next one on the board.
Yes, absolutely. Then There Were None by Blue Write 76, and it goes like this. What do those rocks at the bottom of the fall say? What but to say with every fall, more beautiful aren't you? Ask those waters always in a rush, million needles that crush, laugh on the sad rocks. How strong they stood, the poets gushed, when summer arrived, and then there were none. Water stopped, little of those smile shines did peak. Then the harsh sun did attempt their best to break them an inch. None to sympathize, rocks to find strength, no one to worry. Cause aren't they the infallible rocks? Then, when they were warm enough, the cold needle arrived again, and the forgotten rocks once more bore the rush, and then there were none to know or to see, and then there were none as life went on. End poem.
Reading Pam. I enjoyed this piece. It's very kind of contemplative, you know, looking at the rock on the bottom of a waterfall, you know, and how they're basically the, I want to say bedrock, but the rocks are bedrock, just sounds kind of silly to me, but they're the foundation of the waterfall, you know, and they persevere against the constant beating of the water, you know, and how strong and stable they must be to get through that, even though, you know, people come and remark on the beauty of the water, you know, while the rocks are being pummeled. You know, and then when the water stops in the winter or some other season, then you can see the stones and they get a break beneath the sun, you know, until again the season comes and the water falls again, and no one can see the stones or is even aware that they are there. I don't know, to me this speaks about like the hidden and unappreciated people and things in life that kind of hold it all together and don't get a lot of gratitude. You know, my mind instantly kind of goes to mothers and people who raise children, and how when you compliment someone's child, you also indirectly compliment them, you know, because of all of the work that goes into it, that in acknowledging their children, you are acknowledging that hard work at the same time. And yet there's that lack of appreciation as well, because the person giving that gratitude hasn't necessarily realized the sacrifice made. You know, I don't know if that makes as much sense as I want it to verbally, but I'm just seeing this, you know, the underappreciated is kind of what it says to me. You know, the basis for beauty is maybe often covered, and it's not until, you know, there's something pulled back or there's no more waterfall that you can really appreciate that they were there holding it all together. So I really appreciate this piece. I think it's a beautiful extended metaphor. Viviana, what did you think?
I think you made perfect sense with your description of the parent and child, and how the complimenting the child is also complimenting the parent, but they get overlooked. And I think that's often true of new mothers or new parents in general, where, you know, they walk into the room and everyone's like so focused on the baby that they don't even exist. It seems like everyone's just so excited about seeing the child that, you know, sometimes the parent is a bit neglected in the attention. And I can see where you're going with that, because the waterfall is like that, where everyone's like, oh, look how great the water is. But the water would only look that cool if it had the rocks holding it up in that way. It just wouldn't be the falls the way that it is without that base. So I really like what you said there. I like when it's talking about how when the water is there, the poets gushed. And then when the water stops, little of those smiles, shines, did peak. Nobody's really looking anymore. It's really sad that the rocks are not getting the attention. But again, I get attached to inanimate objects. I always think of that IKEA commercial. Are you sad for the little lamp? That's because you're stupid. But I am. except you think you're supposed to be here. I am sad for those rocks not getting the attention. Then the harsh sun did attempt their best to break them an inch, but they withstood. They weren't giving in to being exposed to the elements and to not getting the attention. The rocks were still there and strong, but just because they're strong doesn't mean they don't need to be acknowledged. So I do think this is a wonderful extended metaphor for the people who hold things together, the ones who are behind the scenes in anything. You know, sometimes it seems like, you know, the star of the show is this the star, but sometimes it's the writer, it's the director, it's all the people building the set and doing all the things that make it work. And it's those behind the scenes people who don't get noticed if there isn't that pretty shiny thing on top, but they're what makes it possible. And I think that this is a good acknowledgement of those people in any sense of life.
Well said, yeah. The underappreciated, for sure, yeah. That's kind of what I was getting at, yeah. The stage managers of life. Excellent comment, Ephesiana. And what are your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was wonderful use of an extended metaphor and imagery. And I like how you both talked about in your comments about the underappreciated. And I like how Herbright does touch on this, or they're right in the idea that the infallible rocks. I thought that the use of the word infallible was really great, and how strong they stood. The poets. Gosh, that second stanza is really just wonderful. And, you know, and it's great to see the beauty and the poeticness in things, but there's also those times we've got to appreciate the inner beauty, the inner strength found in somebody. And so just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I like that you pointed out the inner strength, because I think that's encapsulated well by the idea of the stone. Excellent comment, Pam. What do we have up next, Ephesiana?
We have one by Mamya that I'm going to read. Drip Drop by Mamya. A single drop, minuscule, insignificant, wipe it away. Drip drops. Incessantly on my forehead, not enough to drown, but enough to give a headache, a migraine, pain beyond what I felt before. Drip, 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 one after the other. It never stops. Eventually, it's a deluge. I drown. I try to swim, even when I'm on solid ground. End poem.
Excellent read, Ephesiana. I really liked this poem. You know, immediately my mind goes to waterboarding. You know, it's torture. It's slow torture, but it's still torture. You know, just the idea of a single drop at a time. You know, one drop is nothing. One little push of pressure is nothing. One little prod is nothing. But then you add them all up, one drop at a time, and you suddenly find yourself in a flood. You know, it all builds up. And this actually reminds me a lot of some of the talks that I've had with my boss about my workload, is that there's no one task that I can't do. I can do all of the things that I'm asked to do. The problem is I'm being asked to do too many things. You know, every 3-minute task is not a problem, but then you get 5,000 3-minute tasks and suddenly there's not enough hours in a day to accomplish anywhere close to all of them. and that's what makes me think of, you know, the little pushes and pressures, every little ask, none of them on their own are big or back-breaking or insurmountable. But as you add them, suddenly it's a flood. I really love, too, the counting of drops in this piece. You know, it starts with a single drop, and then it goes drip, drop, and then you have drip, 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 and then it just says, I drown. I really like the build-up in that, you know, and even the incremental increase in the way that it affects the narrator. You know, minuscule, insignificant, and then incessant, you know, and then I have a really bad headache and pain, and then it's never stopping, and then drowning. So I really like, I think this very effectively points up just that build-up and how things become insurmountable. So wonderful write from Mamya. Pam, what did you think?
Pam had to step away for a second, so I'll jump in. I love this, and I, like you, I like that it builds in each stanza, a single drop, drip drops, headache, drip, 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 I drown. It escalates, and while it escalates one drop at a time in the words, it escalates quickly in terms of how it affects you. And I think that's a wonderful metaphor because it's true. You know, all of the little things add up. I can't remember, we had some sort of mental health seminar thing at work recently because a lot of people are going on stress leave or, you know, having a really hard time. And they're like, okay, so what is it that's causing this? And I'm like, it's not one particular event. It's like all the things, all the little things. Like you said, it's, we can handle each task individually, but when you put it all together, it's just, it's been a really hard few years because it was always, you know, just barely making it by, and then the pandemic happened, so everything got a little bit harder, each task, and then, you know, everything else, and it just builds up, and it builds up, and it builds up, and eventually it gets to be too much. It makes me think about this one time years ago when I was living in Waterloo. I can't remember exactly what happened that day, but there were a whole bunch of little things that went wrong. And then I was on my way home from grocery shopping. I didn't have a car, so I'm carrying, like, all these bags. And it's really heavy. And a thing of blueberries falls out of my bag. And the blueberries just roll away. And I was really poor, so buying blueberries was, like, luxury. Like, this is the thing that I couldn't afford, and I bought. And they rolled away into the dirt. And I just, like, completely melted down. And I'm, like, on the side of the road crying about a blueberry that rolled away. And it was not about the blueberry. It was about all the other things. But that drip, 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 little things add up, and you end up drowning. Even when you're on solid ground, it's you're in a spot where, you know, it's relatively safe. There's nothing really horrible happening in that moment, but you still feel like you're drowning. I think that Mamya captured that really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why, you know, it's the straw that broke the camel's back, right? It's not really that one straw broke the camel's back. It's that they all added up to the point where the camel's back couldn't take it. Excellent point. I hope you're a place where you can eat blueberries and don't need to cry about them falling on the sidewalk anymore.
Yes. I mean, not all the time, but yes, I do on occasion have blueberries.
excellent comment. So where are we going now?
Pam is back. Pam, are you able to comment on that one? Did you get to read it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't get to hear it read, but I got to read it while you guys were commenting. And I really have to agree that it's how she mentions the drip, drop, drip, 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 all over and over again, like not over and over again, but it multiple times, really adds to the impact of the rite and how the little things start to add up. And when she says it never stops, eventually it's a deluge. That whole idea that eventually those small problems we find ourselves drowning in. So really just a wonderful brevity and very well done.
Yeah, that accumulation, all the little things. Great comment, Pam. Thank you. What do we have up next, Ephesiana?
We're at mine. So I just did this right before the show. I would not say it's my best work, but I was trying to write on the subject of the prompt was, I'm pretty sure I'm worthless if I can't be of service. So this is Worth by Ephesiana. Insecurities run deep in my vein riverbed. My value drops steep if heroics aren't bled. I show up windblown by anxiety's hurricane, determined to educate and entertain. I persist drenched in depression, being essential bordering on obsession, measuring my worth in the people I inspire, needing all the answers when they inquire, never enough to just be, afraid they'll not want me, earning my spot, overcompensating, invisible if I'm not advocating. I should have listened when they said, put on your oxygen mask first. You can't pull up the drowning when you're already submersed. End poem.
Right, Ephesiana. I really liked this one. You know, just the concept that you can't help others if you haven't helped yourself first. You know, you can't fill a glass from an empty pitcher is kind of what it says to me, you know. And it starts with working out, you know, just about your own state of mind, you know, the insecurities and the anxiety, but you're still showing up and still trying to help others, even when you have all this going on in your own mindset and just wanting to be there for everybody and be there for everything. And just the pressure of that, the need to put others first. But then I think it really is kind of captured in the last couplet of this sonnet, where it says, I should have listened when they said, put on your oxygen mask first. You can't pull up the drowning when you're already submersed. You know, step back, take care of yourself, fill the pitcher. You know, it's a call to self-care. So I think it has a very worthy message, and it's very well done. I enjoyed this piece, Fabiana. I thought it was a great write. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is really impressive. I really like how you do touch on the idea of, you know, how important it is to take care of yourself first. Like, there's nothing wrong with being there for people, but if it becomes an obsession to the point where you don't care about yourself, you're not taking care of yourself, that leads to burnout. I really like the lines, I show up up wind blown by anxiety's hurricane, determined to educate and entertain. I persist drenched in depression, being essential bordering on obsession. just really strong, hard-hitting lines there and an excellent write. Very well done.
I agree. There were some really great lines in there. Excellent comment, Pam. Anything you wanted to add, Athesiana?
No. No, you guys got it. That's what I was going for. I have yours up now, Babbler.
Oh, okay. All right. Is Waffle. Her therapist told her she's a waffle. She compartmentalizes thoughts, feelings, to-dos, and lets life fill her up like syrup, one square at a time, and needs medication when something overflows. People compliment her regularly. She has been told that she's intelligent, witty, capable, even too capable. It scares her. What if she makes a mistake? Will they think she's stupid? Is this really what brilliance looks like? Repeating the words hamburger, hot dog, hamburger, hot dog, hamburger, hot dog, in a sing-song voice in her head, enjoying the imagined sensation of forming an M sound with her lips and the deep-throated tongue feeling of the G for hours at a time to fill the silence? Everything comes easily for her academically, math, English, art, social studies, mechanics. She's never studied a day in her life. But it isn't a good thing. She worries about what happens when something isn't easy. How will she deal with it? Emotionally, she is a hot mess. The syrup runs over and makes the entire waffle soggy, so she can't breathe or think or stop breathing or stop thinking, and it feels like her chest is growing smaller and smaller and smaller, and maybe she'll die. So far, they've only been little deaths. She eats too much. She knows it. She spent this whole time thinking about that waffle. But the syrup is running over, the sweet, delicious syrup, and it's coming down in waves, a tsunami of syrup rolling out of the waffle, telling her it's okay that her father died when she was 3. Just add more butter. It's okay that your 2 best friends died when you were 16. Throw another waffle on the stack. It's fine that she lived in a shitty trailer park and her mother is a hoarder and her brother lives too far away and she's had 2 miscarriages and she knows 12 hours a day is too long to spend at work, but she doesn't know what else to do, so she just does it. And that is too many waffles and too much syrup and a lot of butter. I guess she'll take some more medication.
Wow. This hits so hard. And it just, like, it keeps getting stronger as it goes. In the beginning, I really liked the waffle metaphor that the therapist gave of compartmentalizing, because that is something that you know, people tend to do, and it can work or it cannot work, depending on the situation. And it works well with the waffle. I've never thought of it as a waffle before, but that works well. And then that idea of being considered too good is a frightening thing, because you have to keep living up to that standards. What do you do if you can't? So that pressure to, if you're considered too capable. And I related to that because I'm disabled, but I'm only, like, a little bit disabled. I'm the kind of disabled where they're like, but you can still do things. And they're, like, so proud of me for doing things. And then if I can't, then I'm like, well, I'm no longer that kind of level of it's a mix of things. So I really related to that part. And then when you're talking about emotionally being a hot mess and the syrup runs over, and everything feels soggy, I related to that too. And then when you say she eats too much and she's been thinking about that waffle the whole time and yum, the syrup is rolling over, like, I'm like, damn, you're writing about me. This is totally how I feel. But then you get into the more personal, deeper, darker stuff, where, you know, the really hard things from your life, the father and the best friends and, you know, the complications of the family and the miscarriages and just, wow, so much pain wrapped into one stanza. And then the idea of just trying to cover that up with some butter. And the medication is the butter. And it's okay if the waffle's falling apart because, you know, anything tastes good when it has butter on it. And having that medication, try to hold everything together. This is such a powerful metaphor and incredible piece, and I feel like I could talk about it for a really long time. Each stanza hit me in a different way, but they all hit hard. So fantastic, Babbler.
Thank you.
Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I have to agree. Oh, my goodness. This is just a brilliant use of a metaphor and imagery. And I really like how this touches on the expectations of somebody when they're perceived, you know, and when they are intelligent and witty and capable. But, you know, people, when they think you're capable with everything, and oftentimes they don't understand what it's like to deal with mental health and what it's like to deal with emotional baggage and what it's like to feel the weight of everybody's expectations, including your own. And I liked how this had that buildup of intensity, and it was a real raw feel to this rite, in the way that, you know, it just, as I said, it builds up. It keeps adding on to itself in that almost like a, you know, that feeling of what it's like to break down emotionally, and really just a great rite all the way through, Babbler, and very well done.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And I think that's a great poem to end on tonight. We did have one more on the list, but I don't think we'd have time to properly give him our comments. So I'm going to save that for next week, Jaskaran. And also, we just got it 10 minutes before the show, and I see that there is an audio in it. So because if we wait until next week, I can do the audio for you. We're going to play that next week. So we're not ignoring your poem. I just want to make sure we give it its proper time. Next week, our theme for Double Helix is going to be Dexter's contest about things that you enjoy. What are the small things in life that give you pleasure, that make life worth living? So think about that. And then, Babbler, do you have any thoughts for this show next week? Do you have a contest up yet?
Yeah, I do have a contest up. And it kind of falls neatly with this poem. So next week's contest is about breakdowns, mental breakdowns, but kind of with a literary twist. So I've taken some quotes from some various books that relate to a mental breakdown, and I hope people read through those and find inspiration. Some of them are a little funny, some of them are a little more serious. So feel free to peruse them and get inspired.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one. I feel like it's my area of expertise. which I don't know if that's a good thing, but I'm looking forward to reading through those quotes and writing to that. Thank you so much, Pam, for being here with us the whole show. And thank you, Phil, for giving us this time slot. Thank you to everyone who shared your poetry with us. It is your poems that make up the show, and we're so happy to be able to read them with you. Thank you, everyone, and we will see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.